God, you are so good. You are so gracious, God. You are so gracious, God. Even while we hated you and turned our backs on you, you extended your hands of loving kindness to us. Surely your goodness and surely your mercy will follow after us all the days of our lives.
Yes.
Extend your goodness to us, God. You are good and you do good. Show us your goodness while we are yet in the land of the living, God. Thank you for your goodness, Lord. In Jesus' name. Amen. I'm going to release you to help. My aunt is here, but so he can also help with the children.
He was helping my attitude.
Yes. So every so often when I read the Bible, well, not every so often, I mean, I guess it's a continual theme, is that I get stuck on a verse, right? I'll be reading and I'm like, huh, I wonder why it was broken down that way. I wonder why God chose to put those two things in there and not this other thing. Like, I would have thought this other thing would have been important, right? Like, you just read and you kind of go, huh, like that, right? So my latest verse that I'm stuck on is Micah 6:8, right? And in the New King James, it's, "He has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God?" Right? So Micah here, he goes, hey, this is what is good. Humans, this is what's good. This is what the Lord requires. To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And it's like, I mean, I've read that verse a bunch of times, you know? I'm a fast reader, so I like to kind of do that cycling through the Bible and everything. And I think it's God's mercy, because I'm a fast reader, that he just like stops me on certain things. Like, instead of just whip through it and then whip through again, he's like, hey, look at this.
Can you say that one more time?
Yeah, Micah 6:8. "He has shown you, O man, what is good. What does the Lord require of you? To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." All right, so we, the elders meeting, we are setting up the preaching schedule through like the rest of the year. And I have, you know, 3 Saturday nights where I'm supposed to preach. And I was like, oh, look at that. That verse has 3 parts in it. What a coincidence, right? Not a coincidence. Okay, so that's what I'm thinking I'm going to go through. You know, the God can always change whatever. But each one of those are kind of meaty. Not kind of. They are really meaty. Like, to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God, that's not something you just blow through, right? And if it's something the Lord is commanding you to do, even though on one side it's this kind of thing that we can go, okay, I can enter into that right now. Like, you can read that verse, and if you've never heard it before or never thought about it, you can look at your life and go, okay, so I got to do some justice, I got to love some mercy, I got to walk humbly, right? And you can think right now, if we took a couple minutes and just paused and had Ron come back up and play, right, and we just sat before the Lord, you could walk away from here with some concrete steps that you need to do this week, right? Like, some ways you could do justice, some ways you could be merciful, some ways you could walk in humility, right? However, this is one of those verses that's supposed to guide our whole lives. And this is the thing that both, that encourages me about the Bible, is that on one hand, it's easy to grasp, right? Like you can go, okay. They're like, this is a simple thing, guys. This is what the Lord says, right? Everyone can do it. Walk in it. My kids can do justice. My kids can do mercy. My kids can walk in humility now, right? On the far end of the spectrum, right? And so, but the word of the Lord endures forever, right? The flowers may fade and the grass will fall, but the word of the Lord will continue on. So that means, I mean, I can't get my head around eternity, right? But I'm like, okay, 10,000 years from now. I mean, I still can't really get that, but at least I can kind of pretend like I get that one. 10,000 years from now, this will still remain true. Right? And so God is so good and so wise and so infinitely smart that he's layered this thing, right? That this verse is both easy enough that I can teach my 9-year-old and my 2-year-old to get it. And hey, you got to walk in justice and explain a little bit about what justice means, you know? But like my kids, my prayer has been that they would come to know the Lord early and that their testimony would be that they followed him all the days of their lives.
Yes.
Right? I'm so encouraged by people who come to the Lord late in life and they have this huge like checkered past and then they, everything's turned around and the Lord has redeemed. But what I want for my kids is for them to be 80 and be like, you know what? I started following the Lord at 4 and I never turned back.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that their life is decade upon decade upon decade upon decade of faithfulness to the Lord and his faithfulness to them. And so this verse will keep unfolding for all those decades and then into eternity. Like 10,000 years from now, the Holy Spirit can breathe on it and I can go, whoa, that was in there too? Right? And God's like, yeah, it's been there the whole time. Like, huh. So why don't you chew on that? You know what I mean? And then 10,000 years later, he's like, hey, guess what? And I'm like, whoa, that was in there too? You know, it's like a puddle. Like you can see it, but it's like a puddle with no bottom. Like you can splash in it, you can enter it, but it just keeps going down and down and down and down. And so every verse is like that unfolding before you. And so I've been really sitting with this verse and asking God to unfold it to me. So the Lord calls us in this verse to be workers of justice and lovers of mercy with a spirit of humility. To be workers of justice and lovers of mercy with a spirit of humility. He says that's what our life should be. So tonight, I want to take that first part. Do justly. So the kind of like big title of this sermon is Do Justly, the Lord's Requirements, Part 1.
Yeah.
Right? I like those titles, you know, that and knowing that I'm not going in there, but it's like a vision to go with, okay? All right. We have been back in Rochester, my family and I, for a year, for a full Hebraic year.
Yay.
Okay? Because we got here on the Feast of Tabernacles last year. Like, literally. Like, we got here, we dropped my kids off at the friend's house we were staying. My mom and my aunt came to take care of them. We took quick showers. I think I bought some clothes and changed at the store because I wasn't unpacked. And we came straight to Braddock Bay State Park. And Ron started leading worship. And we were here, right? Okay, so like we literally got here on the Feast of Tabernacles last year. Okay, and so then we're here. And it's just past the Feast of Tabernacles this year. So we've been here a whole, you know, biblical year. And so this year has been, I didn't grow up with feasts or with the Jewish months or anything. Like I didn't know any of that stuff, right? I mean, I grew up in church for the most part. But, you know, people would get out the shofar and they'd say something and I'd just be like, okay. You know, it wasn't a bad thing. I had no idea what was going on. There was a period, however, I was like 11, I think, and we weren't going to church at the time, but I was reading the Bible and I got stuck in the Old Testament and where they would talk about like the altars and stuff. And I was like, man, I'm not doing any of this stuff. Like, I don't have an altar or anything. Like, you're supposed to do this uncut stone thing, and I didn't really know, so I was like, well, I guess, you know, I'm in the backyard with, like, these little, like, well, the side yard, because it's Pullman Ave, right? But I've got, like, these little flat rocks, and I'm trying to figure out something. I'm like, well, I mean, I don't think I can really sacrifice anything, but, you know, the Lord sees my heart. Like, I did not get it, but even at that age, I was like, there's something here that has some life. I don't understand what it's supposed to be, but there's something, right? So this last year, I've been following this as we go, as, you know, as Al shares about the years or the different months. And so because we just started a new month and we just started a new year, I was looking at what this month was. And so it's Tishri, right? That's how I say it. Okay. And so I was reading about it, and it was talking about how this month is associated with, like, the scales. They picture the deeds of man weighed and judgment released. And this is a month to concentrate more on the justice system than you do in other months. And I was like, well, that's kind of cool. I was thinking about justice, and there's this justice going on, okay? And it's to decree that the things that have been scattered will return, to return to your absolute source, to awaken, to arouse, which is like to excite into action that which is at rest, to put into motion that which is languid. It's like those verses, Ephesians 5. And so when I was reading about, like, to arouse or to awaken, I was thinking about Ephesians 5:8. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of a spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful work of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret, but all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light. For whatever makes manifest is light. And then verse 14 is really the one. Therefore, he says, awake, you who sleep. Arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. And so when I'm thinking to awaken, to arouse, that's the verse that immediately I thought, I'm going to awake, you who sleep. Arise from the dead. That was the kind of energy that we were supposed to be having. That it's like those things that were like dormant, right, that we don't really engage in, that now is the time to engage in those things, right, and to cleanse yourself from bitterness was the other thing that I was seeing. And so I say that because I read that later in the process as I was studying this, but it ends up casting over the entire thing. So I'm going to keep going back to it, which is why I wanted to say that. So to do justly in Micah 6:8, I'm a word person, right? So, and sometimes we find the most, Lisa's given me the thumbs up over on the side, right? And so I have consistently been surprised when I look at just a small word, like in the Hebrew or in the Greek from the Old or the New Testament, and see how much is there, right? The word that we just kind of cast over. So I didn't want to ignore the to-do part, right? I didn't want to just assume that it wasn't anything. So I looked up the word to do. And so it's this word asa, okay? And it had all these different contextual meanings in the thing. It was like to make, to fashion, to create, to form, you know? And I was just struck by the fact that it's an active word. All of the contextual meanings, all of the little shades that it can have in the Bible require effort. They don't just happen, right? My mom has gone back to college. You know, she's in the arts. She does ceramics, right? She makes these beautiful ceramic bowls and mugs and like that kind of thing. And it takes work. Like once she gets into the semester, like we live next door to each other and I like don't see her. Right? Like if she's not at work, she is at school. And she is at school late because she has to put so much effort into making these bowls, into making these mugs. Like it takes time. And at the end of every semester, she's like, I don't understand what these other kids are doing. Like this stuff is due on Wednesday. Don't they remember how much time it takes to fire and to glaze? And they're just rolling in here tonight like they can make, you know, 20 perfect mugs and have them ready to go, you know, and it pays off, But even this thing that you treat so lightly, this coffee mug, do you know what I mean? These bowls that I like put my noodles and my ramen in, right? Took time, took effort. She didn't just like, and it just appeared like in Exodus when Moses goes up the mountain and he comes down, he finds the Israelites all worshiping this golden calf, and Aaron's like, we just threw the gold into the fire and it just came out like that. Right? Like, nah, man, that's not how that works. Like, you don't just throw the earrings and the rings and the necklaces in the fire and this finely crafted, like, detailed thing just appeared. Like, nah, man, one of y'all sat there and worked on this. Right? Okay, so to do or to make or to fashion takes effort. So we have this to do justly. And right there, right in that word to do, we know it's going to take energy. Okay? Justice isn't just something that happens. We don't just walk through our day-to-day life like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do and like justice springs up around us. Like that's not how it happens. It takes work. It's something in which we have to act with effect. We have to take actions that lead to change, right? So right there, to do. We know it's going to take effort, and we know it's going to take time. And then we come to the word justice. And justice in the Hebrew is mishpat. There we go. Sorry, mishpat. Okay? And I looked it up in the 1828 Webster's Dictionary because I learned this, that this is what you use for the standard. It's what you use for the standard, okay? And justice in that dictionary means giving to everyone what is his due. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of it, so you might just want to take the highlights or just, you know. Yeah, giving to everyone what is his due. It's a practical conformity to the laws and principles of rectitude in the dealings of men with each other. And then it goes on this whole sidebar about how justice is either distributive or commutative, which those words to me are like math words, like you distribute in the, you know, when you're doing like the quadratic equations, FOIL, right? You distribute, or commutative, like you can switch it back and forth. But when you're talking about justice, distributive justice is like something a judge does. They hand down justice and they spread it out to the people, right? So someone spreads it out, right? And so commutative justice is like when you deal in trade or like communication, it's like one person to another. It's not someone who's over somebody else dispensing justice, not from a judge or from a king. It's our day-to-day lives, okay? It's communication. It's trading. It's connection by dealings between people in common affairs and civilities. And it's also silent communication or exchange between two people, or more than two people, between a person and persons. Okay? And so that's really what we're looking at today, is this kind of concept of the justice that is in our day-to-day lives. Right? And as I kept looking at justice, there was another word that kept popping up, depending on kind of what translation you use. And it was tzedakah, which a lot of times is translated as righteousness. It's like in Amos 5:24, let justice run down like water, and that's the mishpat word, and righteousness like a mighty stream, and that's the tzedakah word. Okay? A lot of times in the King James Version, they do judgment, and then the tzedakah word is justice. And you see these words together over and over and over again through the Old Testament. Like God's talking to David and he's charging him to do justice and righteousness, or judgment and justice. He's a God of justice and righteousness, right? We are supposed to work in justice and righteousness. Like you see them paired over and over and over and over again. And so as I was looking at that, that first justice, the meshpat justice, is a justice that restores things, right? It's a justice that rectifies, that something is out of place, and so they put it back into place. Someone did something wrong, so they get punished, they get judged, okay? Someone had wrong done to them, and so they get restitution, right? It's the justice that corrects. Like if a stream was out of order, it'd be bringing it back into place, right? And the other one, the righteousness, is the justice that if we lived in this way, the other kind of justice wouldn't even be necessary, right? If everybody on the earth lived rightly with God and with each other the way God commands us to, we would have no need for punitive justice or restorative justice, right? Like if we're all living, loving the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving our neighbor as ourselves, every single person is in lockstep with that truth. Is there any need for jails or prisons? No. Because no one's sinning against another person like that. I mean, that's where we're going. That's where human history is going, is that place of justice where we don't need the other kind anymore. But right now, we're where we are. Okay? So, both in ourselves, God calls us to live in a way both where justice is not needed, right? But also in a way that we bring justice. Does that make sense? Right? We walk in a righteous way. We love the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. We love our neighbor as ourselves. It's the greatest commandments, right? And so if we're living in that way, then there is no need for justice because we didn't sin against somebody, right? We're loving our neighbor as ourselves, so there's no need for, oh, you took my thing, and then I have to restore seven times because I stole from someone because I'm not stealing from anyone. But there's still the need for the fact that we live in a broken world. And so as God's people, we are supposed to still be bringers of justice, right? Do justly. In Isaiah 1:17, it says, learn to do good, seek justice, because now we need to kind of know what is justice. What is this thing we're supposed to be doing, right? Learn to do good, seek justice, rebuke the oppressor, defend the fatherless, plead for the widow. Rebuke the oppressor, right? I was using like the Blue Letter Bible app on my phone. And so when I go into the concordance, I'm reading it in New King James, but then when I go into the concordance, it flips to the KJV. And so most times, it's pretty much the same. It just kind of uses different language, different shadings. This time, when it flipped to the KJV, the rebuke the oppressor changed to relieve the oppressed. And I was like, okay, those are rebuke the oppressor, relieve the oppressed. Like they're dovetailed, but those are really different, you know, or I felt like they were really different. So I started looking, and the word is ashar, and it means to set right or to make progress. So I went, okay, I can see how that's both ways. Like if you're talking to the oppressor, to set right and to make progress is to rebuke them, to correct them. But if you're talking to the oppressed, then to set right and to make progress is to restore and to lift their burdens. So I was like, okay, I can see how those two words went. And then I went and looked at the oppressed word, and I felt very cool. Okay, felt very cool because when I looked at the word, it was hamotz, and I was like, oh, that's a heck word. That's a heck word from last week when Al was talking about what year we are in and everything, and he went through all these heck words, right? That were signifying this year, and I was like, oh, that's one of those words, right? And so it means like violent, or by implication, a robber. And so the King James Version is translating it as someone who has had violence done to them. And the New King James is translating it as the person who does the violence. And that's where the two things come from, right? And so, went back to the dictionary. And so an oppressor, because I'm at this point where I'm going, I don't want to assume I know what these things mean. Because we live in a time where lots of words are just getting redefined. They're getting changed. You know, I am 34. I'll be 35 this year. And I've been out of high school for, 17, 18 years? And even in that time, just seeing how words change, like a word like tolerance, you know what I mean? Where when I was in school, you know, and it's not that long ago, when I was in school, you know, tolerance had to do with having respect for a viewpoint that wasn't your own. You know, if I was to tolerate someone else, it was that I wasn't intentionally rude to them. I didn't like, if we're in class and they say something I don't agree with, I don't like just shout them down and start spitting on them or this, you know what I mean? Like, I don't do something crazy. I allow them to speak. I speak, but we can still disagree. And now it's shifted to this, if I don't agree with you, if I don't enthusiastically agree with you, it's not even just agree. Like, if I don't enthusiastically agree with the viewpoint that you're expressing, then I am not being tolerant. And I'm like, enthusiastically agreeing and toleration are like two different things, I thought, right? Like, I didn't think that, like, and I'm just going, okay, it's been 2 decades, and we switched from, okay, guess we're agreeing to disagree, to I can get fired if I am not like, yes, 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 that's awesome. About a whole number of things. About a lot of different things. You know, whatever thing is in your brain, there's probably like 10, 12 more that fall underneath that tolerance thing. And so I didn't want to assume that I know what these words mean. That I know what oppression means. That I know what it means to relieve oppression. That I know what justice even means. Because I recognize that I am a product of my culture. Even though I want to walk in step with what God does, I may not always realize what that is because I've let it be filtered through this other stuff, right? And so sometimes I don't even realize that I'm out of step because I've just never challenged it. Like, just in a silly way, my family, my grandfather, was a tall tale teller, right? me and then I have, 2 female cousins that I'm close in age with, right? My cousin Rashida is 6 months younger than me. My cousin Nia, her sister, is 3 years younger than me. And we grew up together. And so my grandfather dies and we realize that we have no idea, the cousins, how he and my grandmother met. Like, we're sitting and we realize that he has told us a number of stories over the years, like intense stories. And until I'm saying them out loud, I don't realize that I have 3 different contradictory stories, right? Because I've never challenged it. So I'm going, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Opa was in like World War II and he got wounded behind enemy lines. And Oma pulled him to safety. She was the nurse that nursed him back to health, and that's how they fell in love. Right? And then I'm like, wait, wait, wait. I thought Opa was a cowboy and Oma was an Indian and they fell in love. Right? Like literally these are the stories I grew up with, right? And my cousins have their own sets of stories. Right? And we realized that we've just never taken these assumptions and examined them. Like, we've never said it out loud. Can I tell the water thing? The hot water, cold water? Okay. Sorry, I'm asking my aunt. Because she's my grandfather's daughter. There was a period of time where I would regularly get phone calls from my aunt where she would go, which one boils faster, hot water or cold water? Right? Because he had told her when she was a kid, when you just assume that whatever they tell you is true, that cold water boiled faster than hot water and had a whole pseudo-scientific reason for it. And it was just, it stuck in her brain, right? And she would be like, which one? Which one? I'm like, Melissa, if hot water boils at this temperature and the hot water is closer, wouldn't it take less time for it to get? And she's like, I know, but he told me this thing and I just can't shake it, right? And so that's a silly thing, right? This idea that, you know, my grandfather dies and me and my cousins, between the three of us, have 12 different stories of how he and my grandmother met that are all, like, they could be a movie, right? All of them, every single one of them are these massive stories that could be a movie. And I think they met maybe, like, at church and she was playing the piano. I'm pretty sure that's, I think that's how my aunt's like, I don't know, in the back, right? And so it's the same thing with these biblical meanings and how they've been distorted by culture. If you don't examine it, you find yourself totally off track from what God said because you just never thought. And so I don't want to fall into that same trap. I want to examine things, right? And so oppressor, you know, the first definition is like one that oppresses. I'm like, oh, all right, thanks. But it's like one that imposes unjust burdens on others. One that harasses others with unjust laws or unreasonable severity. To oppress means to load or burden with unreasonable impositions, to treat with unjust severity, rigor, or hardship, to overpower, to overburden, to sit or to lie heavy on. Right? I frequently think of oppression as something that can only happen like in like an unjust regime. Right? Like that's oppression. Do you know what I mean? Christians in North Korea, that's oppression. And it is. It is. Don't get me wrong. It totally is. But that's not the only thing that is oppression. Right? In what other areas is someone burdened with an unreasonable demand? In what other areas is someone treated with unjust severity, right, or hardship? And then the kind of scary question to ask is like, in what areas do I treat someone with unjust severity, right? In what areas do I overpower or overburden someone? Like, that's the question I don't like asking, right? I read an article that talked about Disney princess theology, where when we read the Bible, we always put ourselves in the princess role. We're always Esther, never Xerxes, yeah. Right? You know, we're always Israel. We're never Egypt, right? And yes, should we identify ourselves as the person of God and everything in the story? Yes, 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 yes. But are we ever the one putting the burden? Right? Right? Like the Good Samaritan. Are we ever the priest who just kept walking? Right? You know, do we always think of ourselves as a Samaritan, even though our day-to-day life doesn't quite line up like that? Okay? And so when it talked about rebuking, it's like to chide, to restrain, to chasten someone, okay? And when I looked at those words, they all carried the essence of being verbal, of being in someone's face about it, right? Like rebuking the oppressor, if you just look at those words, is never silent, right? It's always active. It's always speaking up. It's always saying it and saying it to the person. It's in up front, right? And so it's like in Revelation, Jesus identifies himself as the faithful witness, right? And it's like, that's what rebuking the oppressor is. It's being a faithful witness, right? And so we're in a time where more than ever the plight of the oppressed is highlighted, right? Like you see it on the news. Do you know what I mean? From either side, like slanted or not slanted. Like you see things about poor people and you see things about immigrants and you see things about displaced and you hear about refugees all the time, right? And even in our policies, we're battling with all these different things like, what do we do with refugees? What do we do with immigrants? What do we do with this? What do we do with that? And so there's all this kind of bombardment where it's constantly on display. Not always in a good way. Sometimes in a very, oh, look at the poor people. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you see, like, after a hurricane, it's like the sad music playing, and it's like the zoom in, and it's like, whoo, you know what I mean? And it's just people, I mean, you see it a lot on the, like, sponsor a child for just $1 a day kind of things, and they just kind of show the kids looking distressed and displaced. And it's not always about helping. It's not always about change. Sometimes it's just about pity, like moving your heart, like, oh, the poor kid, oh, the poor person, oh, the poor this, oh, the poor that. But there's no action. It's just like, oh, so sad, so sad. Do you know what I mean? And justice is not... working justice, doing justice is not like hugging the oppressed person. Like, there's nothing wrong with hugging the oppressed person, right? Right? But, like, the Bible talks about if you see someone who is hungry or in need of clothing, and you're just like, God bless you, and you keep walking, right? You're not doing what is right before the Lord. If you have the ability to feed or to clothe, God requires of you to do that. Right? Like, that's why I say justice isn't a hug. Like, if I'm like, man, that kid, they just walked in the church doors and they have, it's a blizzard outside. They have no coat. They don't have good boots on. I don't know where their mom is. Don't know where their dad is. And I'm just like, stay safe, kid. Be warm. Right? And I just walk away and I have clothes or I have the money to buy clothes or something and I don't meet that kid's need. I'm sinning, right? I'm committing an act of injustice, right? Injustice isn't just being the person to push them down. Injustice is also being the person who sees them pushed down and doesn't take the burden off, right? And so God identifies specific people, vulnerable people, displaced people that he says that we need to have our eyes on. The orphans, the widows, the poor, right? Those who are the stranger in the land, those who are vulnerable, right? In our time, we have even kind of more classes that we look at. We look at, you know, the homeless, and they're all under those shades, but we kind of see more of it. So this is touchy. I'm going to kind of just go with it anyway, right? Okay, so... what should not be a surprise to anyone in the room is that I have brown skin, right? Like, it's right there. It's right here, right? And so, and Tina's like, does she really? Right? And so, I say it like that, like a joke, but frequently, you know, mentioning skin color, people can already think that I'm doing something prejudiced or racist, right? Like, God made me brown. I'm happy. Like, he made me brown. He made other people other colors. As I said at the elders meeting, if there wasn't a purpose for the different colors he would made us, we would all be clear. Right? Do you know what I mean? Like, if there wasn't a glory to be displayed. So just my skin color isn't an issue. Right? Like,
everyone can see my stuff.
Yeah, they can just see all the, just clear all over the place, just everything pulsing. Right? And so, but we live in a time, well, we live in a culture where skin color can be divisive, right? Where people see things different ways, right? Like, this is the only skin I've ever had. So how people relate to me in this way is all I know, right? And frequently I don't realize how screwed up it is until I say something and then someone's like, wait, what? Right? Like, I was having a conversation with my best friend, who is not black. And I had been talking about a lot of race stuff, you know. And she was like, you know, it's really helpful to hear your story. And she was like, but, like, what do you mean when you say that you experience prejudice stuff like every day? And I'm like, I'm just exactly what I said. I experience stuff every day, right? She's like how? I'm like, okay. Have you ever gotten pulled over by a cop? She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, what happens? She's like, oh, license, registration. They ask, do you know why I pulled you over? You know, and then they tell you why, and then maybe you get a lecture, maybe you get a ticket, maybe it's just something little, you know, in New York State, it's frequently your headlights out, you have 24 hours, you know. So when I get pulled over with Ron, like if we get pulled over, right, so that's the way it's supposed to go, right? License, registration, do you know why I pulled you over? They tell you why they pulled you over. If I get pulled over with Ron, if he's driving, it goes license, it goes registration. And then 90% of the time, the next question out of their mouth is there a warrant out for your arrest? And then the question after, when Ron says, no, because there isn't, the question after that is, well, do you owe back child support? 90% of the time, do you owe back child support? I'm my husband's only wife. These kids are his only kids, right? And so I told that to my best friend, and she was like, I'm thinking that the weird part of that is the child support part. And she's like, I've never had a cop ask me if there's a warrant for my arrest out. Like, what? She's like, I know they check that, but they ask him? And I'm like, 9 times out of 10. I'm like, wait, that's the weird part? Right, like, I'm all the way down here thinking that, like, I know this part is wrong. And not even realizing that the first part is, like, that we had already taken a wrong turn way, way, way back, right? And so one of the things to realize is that someone who is oppressed doesn't always see all the ways that they have a burden on them, right? I use that story just because that's a thing I know, right? And so when you're doing justice, this is a practical thing, sometimes the person who is hurting does not know what they need, right? Like, you still need to check in with them and everything, not just like, oh, I'm going to fix this, fix that, fix this, because you may be ignorant to stuff. But someone who sees rightly, their responsibility is to speak up and go, wait, this part is wrong. Like, before, I know you're dealing with that, and that's the thing you want help with, but before we even get there, this part is wrong. Right? Like, that's how you relieve, right? Is you go, hey, no, this is the burden, right? You help accurately define what the burden is. It, in is it Matthew? Oh, I took it out of my spot. Why did I take it out? I'm not sure where it is. Lambs and goats. And Matthew is in, hold on, I'm going to look it up again. It says that a society or a nation will be judged on how they deal with those who are vulnerable. Matthew 25, okay. Let's see, Matthew 25, verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he will set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me. And then he reverses it. He tells the other people, depart, because you didn't do those things. And they're like, when didn't we do those things? And he's like, when you didn't do it to the least of these. So not just individually are we commanded to do justly, but as a community, right, we're commanded to do justly. We are evaluated as a group in how we treat the vulnerable, right? Neglecting them is not just a lack of mercy, but it's a violation of justice, right? Sometimes we let ourselves just kind of go, oh, well, you know, like, it's not that big a deal, right? And so, or we think that this is an extra thing, right? This is an extra thing, doing these things, treating these people, doing clothing and sick and prison and extending ourselves to the vulnerable is on top of the other stuff. Like, first I get this stuff right, and then I do that other thing. But it's not. Over and over through the Old Testament and the New Testament, God demonstrates that justice is at the core of everything else. Where he's like, right there in Micah, they're like, didn't we do this, God? And didn't we do that, God? And didn't we do this? And he's like, this is what I want. You know what I mean? Obedience is better than sacrifice, he says. Right? He says, like, you burned your fatted calf and it was like stench to my nostrils because you're not doing this other thing. Right? He tells the Pharisees, oh, you know, you do a tenth of like the herbs from your garden, but you don't care for the poor. So it doesn't matter. Like, it's not that you don't do this other thing. He goes, hey, if you're not getting this right, then the stuff you layer on top of it isn't helping you. Right? You know, in the same way the Pharisees say, hey, your disciples don't like ritually wash their hands before they eat. Like, oh, you got to deal with that, Jesus. And he's like, yeah, you wash your hands, but your heart stinks. Right? So who's worse off? Right? Because the things on your hands come in and go out. But the things in your heart come out. You know? And so, if we choose not to extend ourselves to those who are vulnerable, we violate the heart of what God asks us to do, right? Because the first commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. We're like, yeah, I love you, Jesus. I love you, Jesus. But then the second, which is like it, equal to it, is love your neighbor as yourself, right? In 1 John, he says, if someone says, I love God and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? Right? Like, I don't like verses like that. Right? I don't like verses like that. Because as long as I can say that my relationship is just between me and God, no one can say anything to me. Right? Like, you don't know my love for God. It's just between me and him. You know, growing up, I heard a lot like, you can't judge me. Only God can judge me, right? When I try to call someone on like their stankness. And so I grew up in the 90s. Like that's the word, stankness. And so, but all through the Bible, like Jesus, you know, all through the New Testament, Jesus says it, James says it, John says it. Hey, you can say you love God all you want, but everyone can tell whether you love God or not because it's how you treat the other people. Specifically, how do you treat the people who aren't like you? Right? How do you treat the people who aren't like you? You know, they will know we are Christians by our love, right? 1 Peter says that they will see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Like, that is one of the biggest signs that we have to the world. That they see us extending ourselves to those who are weaker, to those who are vulnerable, to those who are disadvantaged and disenfranchised. And they go, huh, how do they do that? And how do they keep doing that? Right? How do they keep loving? How do they keep extending themselves? In a commentary in 1 John, David Guzik said, if we are born of him and are abiding in him, then the resources for love are there. Like some people are just like, oh, it's so hard to love that person. If we are born of God and we are abiding in God, then the resources for love are there. It is up to us to respond to his command with our will and our whole being. We have what is necessary. We choose sometimes not to access it. It's one of those uncomfortable things, right? Like an itch, you know? We are to be people who are zealous for good works, who are engaged in them, who ardently pursue them. right? That's Titus, Titus 2:14, that we're supposed to be zealous for good works. And then it's out of our relationship with God, out of knowing that he is, that we are his special people, right? He loves us, therefore we can love. I'm flipping to Isaiah right now. And so the areas in which we have to have justice, if we look in Isaiah 58, and it talks about fasting that pleases God, right? And it's talking about the wrong way that people are fasting. And then in verse 6, it flips over. Is this not the fast I have chosen, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover him and not hide yourself from your own flesh? Then your light shall break forth like the morning. Your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of your Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, here I am. If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and the speaking of wickedness, if you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then your light shall dine in the darkness, and your darkness shall be as the noonday. And so right there, we see three different ways that we can work for justice. So verse 6, is this not the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke? That's justice in, that's dealing with systemic injustice or institutional wickedness. Like, people are oppressed because of a system or because of a law, right? There is a weight on people that is more than just one person sinning against another. They are hurt from a system, right? And then in verse 7, is it not to share your bread with the hungry, that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover him and not hide yourself from your own flesh? That's a justice in which we meet practical needs, right? That's one in which many of us can see how we can easily work in that. Whether we do or not is a whole nother story, but we can easily see that. Like, oh, those people have no coats. You know what I mean? And you organize the coat drive and you get all the coats for the people, right? Or the Thanksgiving baskets, or you, you know, adopt a family, all those different things, those practical needs. That is one way in which we do justly. And then the third way, verse 9, if you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and the speaking of wickedness. Another way in which we do justly is to have genuine respect and dignity for people. In the words that we say, when someone is oppressed, when someone is vulnerable, do we have a demeaning attitude? Do we speak condescendingly about their situation? Do we use speech that belittles people or the group that they're from? Do we make uninformed generalizations? Oh, those people, right? In James, it talks about how the tongue, if you use it for blessing and for cursing, is like a spring that brings forth fresh water and brackish water that you can't drink from. About 6 years ago, 8 years ago, Ron and I had a Bible study that would meet at our house on Sundays. And at one point, we went through the book of James. And one of the things that we did, it was teens and young adults, we would take a section and we would ask them to paraphrase it, like put it in their own words, like to make it have some meaning, right? Put it in their own words, and then they'd ask some questions and we'd work on how it applies. And a gentleman, when he was, we're like the same age, he, when we paraphrased that chunk, I will never forget it, right? Because it was, he said it was like a tongue that speaks both good and evil is like a water fountain that spews out both good water and backwash. It was the most disgusting image. Like, can you, like, I have kids, and like, they're at the point now where, well, no, I'm actually still not willing to share my drinks with them. Like, I thought maybe, but no, it's only when we have straws, right? And I just remember one time we were at some place and one of the kids had a bottle of water and they had their whole mouth like around it and they were drinking and then like, Sorry. He like lost. Right, and it's like the water just came back out of there. And I'm looking at it, and like the quality of the bottled water is just changing before my eyes. And I'm like, and so I just look away. And one of my friends is like, oh, good, you're their mom, and you can't look either. Because I'm like, does this disqualify me from having children? Right? And I'm like, no, it's gross. It's gross. And so it's like that image of like, you know what you expect when you push the fountain down for water, right? Like, shh, fresh water, right? And it's like seeing like that, right? And that's what it's like when our tongues praise God and then speak curses over people, right? And sometimes we think we're exempt from this because we're like, well, I'm not actually cursing, right? Like, I'm not actually cursing, but it's like, like, I was at the gym last week, and I went solely because I had work to do, and they have the two-hour sitter service, and so my kids were playing, and I was getting my work done upstairs in the cafe area, and so I listened to this guy. He was having this conversation. I couldn't hear the woman's side of the story, but the guy was very loud, and I'm listening to him speak about a social issue, right? Doesn't matter which one, but he's speaking about a social issue. He's speaking about people who are oppressed. And he is sharing this just really uninformed opinion. Just really hurtful words about what these people should be doing about their situation and how they were going about it all wrong and how this was just what they get and everything. And it was just like, I'm sitting there and my stomach's just like flip, like, you know what I mean? And that's another way of cursing, right? You're just condemning people to the injustice that they're in and saying it's all their fault. Yes. Do people's sin lead them into bad situations? Yes. Are people also in bad situations because our world is full of sin? Yeah. Yes. And so just to assume that you know, with no knowledge, why someone is in the situation they're in is just the height of indignity, right? Like you're just, well, that's what they get. If they were blah, 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 then they would blah, 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 blah. And it's like, really though? Really though? You know what I mean? Do you, really? Really? You know? And it's... We need to watch that in our own mouths. What do we say? What are we spewing out of our mouths, right? Like, are we doing justly by working to meet people's practical needs as individuals? Are we doing justly by looking at where people have burdens unjustly put on them, like where a group of people have a burden unjustly placed on them and working to alleviate that, right? And are we doing justly by watching what comes out of our mouths? Are we speaking blessing and not cursing over people who are hurting, right? Over the disadvantaged, over the poor and the vulnerable, over the fatherless, right? So many times, I mean, people just say whatever about kids who have no parents, right? Like they just, like ugly things. And you're just like, really? Really? That kid has no mom and dad. They're in the foster system. They're waiting to be adopted. And you said that about them, you know? And so one way, if you're going, I'm winding down, if you're going, how do I do this? Where do I do this? Like the first thing to do is to sit before the Lord, right? And to ask the Lord for his heart, right? We just sung Jesus be the center of it all. Right? Justice comes from God. Justice is at the heart and the core of who God is. We are reflecting his heart when we work in justice. Work in, separate word, justice, not compressed. I realize that sounded wrong. And so the world would say that certain things are justice that aren't. Okay? You know, in the Beatitudes, it talks about blessed are the pure in heart, and then it says blessed are the peacemakers. So pure in heart comes first. we stand against anything that is not of God, right? So if someone's saying, oh, this is an area you need to work justice in, and it's something that is sinful, like, no, that's not justice. That's sin, right? But those things that are on the heart of God, he says he is a defender of the widow, the father to the fatherless. Those are things we extend ourselves on behalf of, right? So we sit with God. We ask him for his heart. We ask him for his justice. We ask him to see people as he sees them, not as we think they are, right? And then another really practical way when you're going, where do I start, is you look at yourself and at the different traits you have, and you see if that trait is on, which side is that on, right? Like, this isn't necessarily a justice issue, but Ron and I have a lot of conversations about male-female issues, right? And so, like, he was surprised one day we were sitting in a room with some boys, young men, and I was saying, we were talking about approaching girls and stuff, you know? People always want to talk about, like, dating and how do you, like, get something started in a right way. And I was like, well, you know, let me just tell you something. And they were just like, you know, I don't understand. My girls will just, you know, they brush you off. And I'm like, well, how are you approaching someone? I said, because if I'm like, let's say I'm in an elevator and a dude walks in after me and it's just me and him in the elevator, like, I'm already uncomfortable. And they're like, huh? I'm like, yeah, I'm already uncomfortable. And then if he starts to, like, hit on me, like, if he starts to, like, compliment me and he wants my number, like, even if we were just, like, at a thing together, like, that's a really uncomfortable situation, right? Because I'm like, what's going to happen if I say no? Are they going to be cool with that? Or is it going to get violent? Because some people do get violent, right? And so they're like, really? Like, you know, I'd want to approach a girl like that because, like, then my boys don't see me get shot down, right? And I'm like, well, it's uncomfortable. And so I asked Ron, I said, Ron, when was the last time you walked into a room and felt physically disadvantaged? Like, felt threatened? And he was like, like, he couldn't even, like, think of it. Like, those were the faces. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, if it got bad, I mean, I might not win, but I'm not, like, concerned. And I'm like, a lot of times I walk into a room and I'm already like, ooh, this could be not awesome, right? And so that's why I say, where you look at a trait, like, he's a guy, right? So he's like, okay, I'm a man. In what areas is being a woman not easy, right? Like, at which side am I on? Am I on the side where it's harder to be a dude, or whether it's easier to be a dude when I'm going through my day-to-day life? A lot of ways it's easier for him to be a man. So looking at ways where he can work injustice, work justly. I need to stop saying the in and the justice so close together. Work justly is to go, what areas can I help make things smoother? Right? Like, I am married, right? I have a husband, and we're young. In what areas can I make things easier for someone who no longer has a husband? Right? Like, that's when we're talking about, like, how you extend yourself to the widow. Like, what things are easy in my life because I have a husband? What things are harder for somebody else because they no longer have one, right? Or, you know, circling back around to the race thing, you know, what areas in my life are smoother because I'm part of the majority culture, and what things in my life are not as smooth because I'm not part of that culture? So, like, if I'm trying to work justice in that way, in what areas can I ease it for someone else, right? In, if we're talking about, like, people who are hurting or disadvantaged or poor, like, okay, I have money. I own a house. What things are easier for me because I have a job? What things are harder for someone who doesn't have one and can't have one? Who doesn't have a home? Where can I help them? You know what I mean? Like, you see how I'm saying, you just kind of, like, circle it through, because sometimes you look at it and you make it this huge monolithic thing. Like, I have to stop everything, injustice, or whatever, whatever, whatever. Or we get all tied up in thinking that we have privileges, or that we're better off than somebody in someone else's way. And it doesn't have to be a big deal, right? It's like, man, it's negative 10 degrees outside. I have a home and I have heat. What about someone who doesn't have those things? How can I help? Right? You know, like, My kids have food on the table. What about someone who doesn't have food on the table? What can I do? You know, instead of going like, what do you mean I have advantages? I have a hard life too. It's like, yeah, okay. But do you have food on your table? How can you help someone who doesn't? Do you have a coat? How can you help someone who doesn't? You know, and you can easily see how there's maybe areas where maybe you're the side that needs help, but there's other areas where you're the side that can give help. Yeah. You know, and that we are not exempt from being the giver when we're in the position that we can be the giver, right? Even if we are not the one who did the injustice, like John the Baptist told the tax collectors, give back, right? The soldiers don't overpower people. But then he also told people, if you have two coats, give someone one, right? And so he was saying the people who actively committed injustice, they needed to correct what they did. They needed to correct it. But even just the people who God had blessed were expected to also give. And so the point of this isn't to say that any one of us is actively committing oppression or actively committing injustice, although you may look at your life and go, ooh, that's an area where I've been cursing people, or I've been making a burden heavier on people because I treat one group with this set of expectations and I put a heavier set of expectations on someone else, right? But even just in our day-to-day lives, looking at the areas where we can do justly, where we can relieve the burden that is on someone else, or we can rebuke and counteract the person who is putting the burden down. Yeah. So God, as we started this off, you are good. And you do good to us. And I thank you for the goodness and the generous spirit that you pour out on each one of us. And so, Father, I pray that as we step through our lives, God, that you would highlight the areas in which we can do justly. That we would not be a people who are complacent. That we are not a people who only contend for our own promises, right? God, help us to be a people who contend for the body as a whole and for your kingdom to be done on earth as it is in heaven, God. Yes. God, the promises that you give each one of us are great, and we thank you for them. But we go further together, God. And so I pray that you would help us to lift up those who are near us, who are under heavy burdens, that you would help us to extend our hands to do good works, that others would see you and glorify you because of the way your people act. Help us to examine our hearts. Help us to examine our lives. Help us to know the truth of your word and not to walk passively through our lives thinking that justice just happens because it happens, but to know that we are called to love in an active way, to not just in a trite way, but to truly be your hands extended, to let it not just be words, but to actually look at our lives and see the areas where we can extend ourselves for the vulnerable, for the poor, for the widow, for the fatherless, for the stranger in our land. Help us, God. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, Val. So did you think of ways you can do justly? That is our son's favorite verse. As Val was talking, I wondered if next part is love mercy. And I wondered if Bill chose that as his favorite verse because we gave him a dog named Mercy. And he loved mercy. We have choices to make. Don't send a winter coat to Houston in the middle of the summer because you think they need a coat. Ask the Lord what it is they need so that you can do justly. It could be as simple as putting a note on someone's door without them even knowing that you did it, to just let them know that they're loved. He either got raptured or captured. It's amazing what you see from up here. How did you keep talking? There are refreshments next door. Please stay in fellowship. Have a very blessed week. Let the Lord show you how to do justly this week. Amen. I love you all.